Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Roll Route, to the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is we continue to address issues between food production and food consumption. J.C. Cole, banking on 18 years in Lafayette. He's been there, done that, seen it. He's just here to tell us what's about to happen. How's J.C.?
JC's hanging in there this week. This is a tough week.
So yesterday was the anniversary of the death of Stalin. Were you in Lafayette when Stalin kicked the bucket?
No, I didn't get there right then. I didn't have the invite.
Oh, I don't remember what year it was. Do you?
I was in the mid-50s, I think.
Was it the '50s?
Yeah,
I just know it was yesterday was the anniversary. Yeah, I contributed 53, March 5th, 1953.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So, what's happening this week?
Well, one of the interesting things that not many people would realize is that the Schumann residence is the residence of the Earth. And it is spiking off the charts, and we're not sure why. But you know, considering that our body is mostly water, that should affect us, the frequencies. So the frequency of the Earth is high right now. So if you feel feeling strange, and I notice for some people who are more empathic or more sensitive, they get really feel bad during these times. But so anyway, yeah, the Schumann residence is spiking.
I'm completely foreign to how that works. I mean, I know that my body's like 75% water, which when I found out my brain was almost 80% water, I thought I'm going to feed that thing.
Red wine is wonderful.
I said, where did you hear red wine in my discussion? What percentage of red wine is water?
Yeah, I would say the majority, but you need those collagens. They're very healthy for you.
Oh, okay. All right.
Right. Yeah, they don't have collagens, I think, in beer. It's just, you know, right. Anyway, so
how did we get to beer and wine from my brain being 80% water? I missed something.
All right, moving right along, but not fast right. enough. So yes, as we started a little bit, my favorite Zionist has announced her resignation, right? Victoria Nuland is stepping down, which is quite suspicious.
It is quite suspicious. And today on Across the Pond, I played a 28-second clip of her at the beginning of the Russian-Ukraine war talking about we must protect the Ukraine because we have these biolabs there. And then immediately after, everybody started denying that there are biolabs there. And now right. she's stepping down means something's happening.
Let's just say this is a chess move, and it's a very suspicious chess move, you know, because she has been behind the scenes for decades, right?
And well, Zelensky is the whatever of Ukraine because of her actions. She's correct. Evil.
Actually, some people are calling her the president of Ukraine. It goes farther back.
Maybe that's why she stepped down. She's going to go with her other job now.
Yeah, maybe Zelensky's out and she's going to leave Ukraine. By the way, if I'm not mistaken, the laws of Ukraine were changed where the government can be governed by non-Ukrainians.
When did that happen?
It's about the time that Victoria Nuland stuck her finger in it, right? but when I think it was Poroshenko, Okay. Oh, look, my Ukrainian. I don't speak any Ukrainian. So let's say she funded the overthrow of the elected president, I think, right. Yukushenko. And that was in 2014. That started the revolution. What happened with the revolution was people got upset at the overthrow. Some people got upset at the overthrow because he was leaning towards dealing with Russia more than with the EU. Okay, now Victoria Nuland is ethnically Ukrainian Jewish, so she should never have been in that position. Right, she's a conflict of interest, and the same with what's his name, Andrew, secretary, our secretary of
Blinken.
Yes, he's that ethnically Ukrainian. They have conflicts of interests. They shouldn't be in this position at all. Let's move on to that. The my understanding, and of course I can be wrong, is that the Nazis who have been left there in Ukraine for a good 50 years, they ended up shooting both the police and the protesters. So the protesters thought the police shot them, and the police thought the protesters shot them, but it was really the Nazis, and they started the civil war. Then I think it was Poroshenko got put in place by Nuland, and then started the ethnic cleansing of ethnic Ukrainians that were Russian who lived in Donbass. That started the civil war. Okay, so it was all provoked all by these Zionists. Okay,
I just have to jump in because they're going to do what they do, and I did this week a deep dive into Catherine the Great, which is where the Ukraine originally came from, the conquering of Catherine the Great and developed the Ukraine, the great agricultural region of Russia. And so that's been happening going back to 1760, probably beyond. But that was the formation of the Ukraine. And that whole concept on how that came to be is fascinating because it's parallel to exactly what's happening today. But still, what irritates me more than anything, JC, is that we have our elected officials that are supposed to be representing their constituents, like you and me, who have just flooded billions and zillions of dollars into the Ukraine without asking questions, just falling prey to, oh, Putin's a bad guy, we got to help the Ukraine. There's so much more to this, and nobody stopped it.
Right, and they're claiming that, they're coming up with the exact the same agenda that was in Vietnam, almost. Oh, we have to go and fight in the jungle, of which we were warned never fight in the jungle because we don't know how to it. Was it Douglas MacArthur, I think, said never fight in the jungle, right? But we went and fought in the jungle to stop the communism because it was going to overtake the world. Okay, so what are they saying now? Saying, who was it? I think it was Secretary of NATO came out and goes, well, no, it was Macron. The president of France came out this week and said, well, Putin's going to take over all the countries. He wants to take over 10 of the countries. We have to stop him in Ukraine. First of all, let him take Ukraine, and let's see if he takes number two. Like, what evidence do you have except for just a bunch of, road apples, horse manure? They're just making that up. I see no evidence that the Russians want to take any countries, especially with a whole bunch of libtards. Russia might, give them back. Can you imagine taking something like, California? No, you can have it back.
Yeah, the problem is that too many states are trying to outpace California in today's world. J.C. Cole, my guest, we are rolling through a Wednesday roll route. I need to remind you that Greg Hager continues to pound the pavement, bringing you the heartbeat of America. Greg Hager is a friend of mine, Country Music Entertainer of the Year. You can go check out why and how he earned that honor, mostly because he writes all of his own stuff. Greg Hager's songs and his country roots will keep this nation in boots, and all things come from people wearing boots. I should say all good things. I suppose bad things do too, but you can choose good or bad. GregHager.com, full details. If you need a little inspiration, the veteran song that he has will move you. It has moved me. GregHager.com. Book him for your next event. We're back with more Roll Route, J.C. Cole, after this. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Lewis alongside J.C. Cole coming to us. Hey, 18 years in Lafayette. I think you have a tremendous handle on this. I've been on this path today that the freedom of individual citizens is directly tied to the ability of the citizen to own ruminant animals. Now, I'm including ruminant animals because in most of the world that could be a goat, but obviously we're talking about cows. The Plains Indians had bison. If you do not have animals that can convert forage, upcycle that into nutrient-dense food like milk or meat, you're going to struggle with your individual freedom. Can you shed any light on that with your experiences of being in Lafayette after the crumble of the Soviet Union in 1992?
Well, they were allowed animals, okay? I don't know how... what the ownership rights were, because ownership rights during the Soviet time were quite different. For instance, you didn't own property. You know, you had the right to use property, but you didn't own it. Right. And then, of course, then Latvia became free and you were able to own things. So I can't really say. I hadn't had that experience. But I do believe that a very significant part of our health is related to animal protein. And so if you control animal protein, they control the health of the human being, right? And I don't know, I think we'll find out why they're trying to make us eat bugs, right? It's not to save the planet.
You don't think it has to do with climate crisis?
The only part it has to do with climate crisis is the same mayhem, you know, idiots saying the same thing. But no, it has nothing to do with climate.
Wow, that's right. A revelation.
No.
But didn't you in some way make my point that during Soviet Union days, you're not allowed to own property, so to speak, and life is a struggle. And the independence comes and you can own animals and you have the ability to improve your life.
You have the ability. That was one of the big things. That's one of the big things I talk with the Latvians is that life was so miserable in the communist system. They were pretty much the majority of them were of the people were optimists that life would get better. Okay, the challenge was that you had to build that betterness. I mean, capitalism is a very tough system, you know, and nobody was there to teach you capitalism or how it worked. Actually, one of the things I did, I was the chairman of what's known as Junior Achievement, which is a system of teaching economics to first graders to 12th graders. It's pretty interesting. Math, money, what money is, and stuff like this. One of the great things about Latvia, something like 12% of the student population were in these junior achievement programs, teaching them about commerce, about money, right? What it is. And we're not teaching it to our own children.
No, we're not. I mean, if you look at Marxism, and study it, it is the indoctrination of kids so that you will control them when they become adults. That's just, I mean, I very much abbreviated it, but that's what it's about.
Well, what my personal belief now is communism is anti-human. It destroys the soul. You are not allowed to grow, experience, you know, what you're almost like what your destiny is. It forbids you from doing that. It's a vicious system.
So explain this to me, because it was just so foreign when people were telling me about it in the 90s, but now I completely understand it, and I want to see how true it was. I have friends, personal friends, who in the late 90s had a window to go into former Soviet countries, and most of them end with a Stan, and Kazakhstan would be one, where they would go in there, they sold cattle. And some of these guys would go over there for a period of time and try to help people get into the cattle business, so to speak, because the resources were there. But I talked to more than one, two or three, who said they have been in communism for so many generations. They're now not comfortable trying to come out of it, and they're seeking to just go back to have everything provided for them. Is that an embellishment, or how did that come together?
Part of that is true. It's like the Bob Dylan, you know, I think over 30, if you remember back then, if you're over 30, you know, you're over the hill kind of in your mentality. Well, it's very difficult. I mean, we are a computer. We are programmed. We're talking in the language called English of human programming. And so very few of us realize that we're programmed. And so. So you can be 50 years old, you live your life to a communist system, which is like, let's say, a different chess game, and all of a sudden you go to a capitalist system, which is a completely different game. No one taught you the rules, and you try to do the best. I mean, you think you're doing the best, but you might be using rules that only work in communism. I mean, this is one of the big learning experiences I had. I couldn't figure out why my people would do certain things. You know, I said, well, why did they do that? That makes no sense. Made no sense to me. I grew up in capitalism, right? And I'm scratching my head. And I finally learned to ask a better question. Under what paradigm does that action make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, and I could. Stories and stories and stories, how I got tortured, you know, almost every day by my people doing things that were just stupid, right? You know, I used to call it stupidity stress. And finally, I realized, stop letting it hit you, otherwise I'm going to have a stroke, right? Just deal with it, right? For instance, here, I'll give you one. All right, here. I finally wrote it down in paper in Latvian and in Russian and had everybody sign it. Okay, so that we had an agreement, this is what the boss wants. That if you had a problem, you had to call me. Okay, if you had a problem, you called me, period. Okay, if you didn't call me, then you get to pay for it. All right. That was about as simple as it got. So they borrowed my vehicle, and it gets a flat tire. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I understand. They didn't have manuals for cars. So I understand. They didn't know where the jack was. They couldn't find the jack. And of course, it was hidden underneath the back seat. And of course, the manual would say that. I didn't expect them to know that. I expected them, if they had a flat tire, to call me. They didn't. What did they do? They drove 5 miles home to get a jack to jack up the car and shredded the tire. That's what they did.
Yeah. So they saw I understand that.
Yeah, but they violated the rule, the one rule. If they had a problem, they call me. And they have a mobile phone. So I made them pay for the tire until they stopped doing those things.
Yeah. In some way, you were just replacing the authority they previously had, and now you become the authority and telling them what to do. What your belief was, it was best for their long-term interest and yours, but you became the authority.
That, oh, well, but I am the authority because I'm their boss. Right. By the way, thing is it that what was it? Let me see if I can remember it correctly. The difference between capitalism and communism. In communism, you never criticized. You never criticized the politicians. You always criticized your boss. In capitalism, you never criticize your boss. You always criticize the politician.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to liken that whole situation, and I don't know if it's a good analogy, but it appears to be, that there's a lot of people, and I have friends, who grow pheasants, and then they release the pheasants, and the pheasants are in a complete captive state. Everybody's like, oh, the poor pheasants, except they have everything that they need. They kick them to the wild, and a very low percentage of them survive. Pheasants in the wild know how to adapt and survive. And I think that what you just described with coming out of communism would be like kicking pheasants out into the prairies and say, go, good luck.
It's true. I almost never hired somebody over 50 years old. Why? They just couldn't wrap their head around the new system. Right?
This is an old system. Every 10 minutes or so, we take a break, and we will be back with more J.C. Cole. Simpson Farm Enterprises, based in Hayes, Kansas, doing business from Nebraska to Texas, Colorado included, would invite you to get more information about the Apache sprayer technology. North of Nebraska, you're going to want to go to High Plains Apache, based in Mandan. More details about the innovation, the reliability, the service, and controlling the pest in your field, which would be plants, or insects. Maybe you want to do a little fertilizer application. Go get more details about the Apache sprayer at simpsonfarm.com. More J.C. Cole Roll Route after this. Welcome back. Roll Route. Trent Luce, J.C. Cole. We're talking about releasing pheasants into the wild. Kind of.
A good way to look at it is everything is a jungle. Okay. You're looking out there in Nebraska. You have your type of jungle. And well, you come here to New Jersey, believe me, it's a jungle. But it's
I'm aware.
Right. But you know, so can you adapt? Possibly. Well, when I went over to the Soviet Union, it was a totally different jungle and it was a different language. And I had a really difficult time, except for Latvia was on the fringe of the jungle. So it had been a little more westernized than if you went to the deep part, which was, of course, Moscow. The deeper you went into the jungle, the more problems you had, and the more you needed a guide. Okay, the problem was, could you trust the guide? That pretty much explains a lot.
How many people actually knew English? I'm going to assume very few.
Oh, very few.
And that language barrier had to be just, rude. How do you have hair left?
That's why I wear a hat.
You're wearing a cap. I'm wearing a hat, just to be clear.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Yeah.
So that language barrier has to be huge in that time for you.
The language barrier was huge. Almost nobody spoke English. And interestingly enough, during the Soviet time, and they had good schooling in some ways, right? And they would learn another language. It was generally German. So when they realized I didn't speak Latvian or Russian, they would speak German to me. Like
because you knew German?
No. they would just speak German.
Babushka.
I mean, one day, no, seriously, I mean, it was so, I was walking very early on. I was just less than a year after the collapse. I'm walking along the beach in what used to be a forbidden location because of military, but the military was now gone. The Soviet military was gone. Walking along the beach with another American, and we bump into a fisherman at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I greeted him in Russian because I knew how to speak enough Russian at that time, and he greeted me back, and he said, wow, strangers, how nice. And then he looked at me, he goes, oh, where are you from, Estonia? And I'm looking at him going, no, I'm American. He's like, you're American? How'd you get here? You know, it's like all kinds of things. One time I was in, I loved going to the consignment shops and the antique shops because you get to see the culture. And you get to see part of the culture was 100 years old. Fascinating. So I'm in this antique store. And I knew this one guy there who, I said, so how much is this, this item? And the guy goes, I don't know, let me ask. So he asks his boss who's playing chess in Russian. You know, it's like, you know, сколько стоит? And the guy answers like, it's not, he's a foreigner. $25, right? Just make up a bargain, right? And I looked over him, and I looked at him, and in perfect Russian, I went, that's really expensive.
Okay, but I want to go back to the guy's statement that said, you're American, how'd you get here? All right, so we're talking about the 1990s, where people are traveling the world in a whim. You can go back to Buffalo. I'm amazed that Buffalo Bill Cody went to Europe, and he put on Wild West shows in Europe in the late 1800s. That's so people correct. Are traveling the world for 100 years, and yet they've lived in communism so long that they can't imagine going across the ocean somewhere. I think that speaks volumes.
To see an American for the first time. Actually, in 1991, even during when it became free, you had to fly through Moscow.
Really?
The system wasn't set up yet to fly directly, to fly into Latvia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one of the big problems we have in America is we take so much of what we have for granted. We don't know that we don't know that we could lose it. One of the things I like about the Mormon church is they send most of their young people out here
mission work.
Yeah. So, you know, I bumped into the young Mormons all the time at the only Subway shop. It was the only place they could get anything close to American food.
Sure. Right.
But they're learning. They're learning. Hey, what do you mean we have the possibility of not having hot water? Or water, right? You know, sometimes the water broke, and not water broke. And of course, you didn't have peanut butter. And I remember when the first convenience store gas station opened up. You know, like we would have what would you have it? A Wawa gas station store or a 7-Eleven. Something like that. The Norwegians brought in Statoil and they opened up. And I actually said to my friends, because I was the only one with a car, right? And I said, okay, kids, in the car, we're going to the mall. It's like, you know, we drive to this little convenience store. Oh, Snickers. Oh, my God, popcorn. Oh, look at that. We can buy popcorn. The world is there, you know, there is a God. It's changing. And I mean, literally, we'd spend like $20 on, you just couldn't get. There was something called the Snickers Index. This is a very interesting thing because the Soviet Union was so big, but you didn't have any index to see how different parts were growing. So Snickers from Mars candy were one of the first candies in, and you would price the Snickers in different regions. And there would be a different price. So, you know, it's like, let's say in Riga, Latvia, it might be, let's say $1 a bar. And in Moscow, it might have been $2 a bar. So they actually would start to report this. The Snicker Index is, and you'd see, it's like a cost of living index in different areas. It's fascinating stuff.
Same thing still happens in the United States today in the farming world, where you have chemical and seed prices different in one country based upon what they can afford to pay versus another country where they charge as much as they can get.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's how our brain works. One of the ways our brain works is comparison.
Right.
Yeah.
So just today, I learned that we have 50,000 consumable plants on Earth. And yet three plants, corn, rice, and wheat, comprise 51% of the calories consumed globally.
Right.
What was the diet like when you got to Lafayette in 1992?
Boy, it was meat and potatoes pretty much.
You did have meat?
They did have meat. They would eat much more pork than beef. The cow was not raised for beef. It was raised for milk.
Milk.
And then when it got old, it went to beef. So so all of the beef was really tough, right?
Yeah.
But pig, which, and also the pig would forage more, and that the pig would be raised for pork, and so the pork was quite tender, right? And they also had chicken. They had a lot of chicken, and they also had smoked chicken, which you don't see here for some reason, but smoked chicken is quite good.
There's a lot of places I could go with smoked chicken.
Right, and so
you got to cover it up somehow. So you might as well give it some flavor with smoke.
It would actually, smoked chicken is in Eastern Europe is quite good, and they also had some fish because we I'd say 70% of Latvia is on coastal areas. Just guessing. So although they have what's known as lamprey, lamprey is like a relative of a a snake. It's a
reptile.
No, it's
they eat a reptile.
No, I'm missing it.
People do eat rattlesnake, though. I can't believe it.
What's an ocean snake?
Like an eel?
An eel. It's like a relative to the eel. And it is very, very strong in fish taste. Oily. And I do not like it. Of course, that's one of the things. If you grow up eating that stuff, you love it.
If you're hungry, things taste better.
I'd
have to be pretty hungry to eat seaweed, though. I mean, I've tried so many times, and it's like, nope, I'm out of this.
Well, there are certain things. I mean, you know, it's one of those, you either love kidney or you hate it, but there's not a lot of middle ground, right? And
yeah, well, it's all what you're forced to eat, or you go get your nutrition where you can.
Right. Yeah, so, and of course, different regions. One of the things I love to do was, I told you, at Christmas time, I'd travel different ways, and I'd look at the different Christmas customs. And what was fascinating to me was, you know, you have like, 27 European countries or so, that you would think that the Christmas tradition would be pretty much the same. Not even close. They had, most of them had totally different food traditions.
Right? I believe that.
Right, and of course, then if you scratch your head, you figured it out. Grandmother and mother had to figure out how to make a feast in the middle of the winter. Right, so almost all of the food was either only what was available at that time, like carp Prague. They would always serve carp. Well, they had a big river, and so they'd go out and fish for the carp. And this is a big carp. This is like 10-pound fish.
Which brings me to what I want to talk about when we come back and start the last segment, storing food with or without electricity. We'll ask J.C. Cole when we return. I want to remind you before I let you go that nitric oxide is an abundant element in nature for a reason. And yet we as human beings are short on nitric oxide. Consequently, we have cardiovascular problems, we have mental problems, and we have other problems, which all you got to do is pay attention to TV and you see that your blood flow can fix. Dr. Nathan Bryan has not only authored that, he authored a book with a gentleman from the Netherlands about the importance of nitrates in food production. Go figure. Get all of these details at no2u.com, no2u.com. Put Trent as your coupon code, and I pay the shipping, not you. We're back. The last segment, Roll Route. J.C. Cole after this. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Lewis, J.C. Cole, walking through. We're going to probably get to this week in history, but we're going to finish walking through J.C.'s time in Lafayette, 1992 through 2010. What was the electricity grid like in 1992 when you got there?
Well, that's interesting because actually that was one of my first jobs. The U.S. has a way of supporting its allies, and that's by donating some money to do feasibility studies. So we did the feasibility study to do the entire Latvian electric grid from U.S. Trade and Development. It was one of the largest grants given. It was about $1 million. And that gave us the ability to study the entire grid in Latvia. So first of all, the electricity is 220. So you got it at 50 hertz. So where we run on 110, 60 hertz. And you got to be very careful what your equipment and plugging in. I ruined a very nice printer one time by accidentally not paying attention and plugging it in, and heard snap, crackle, and pop.
So would this kind of be like the lessons you teach people who drive on flat tires for 5 miles to get their jack? You learned a financial lesson for yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
He blew up a printer.
I blew up a laser.
So what was the source of the electric that brought to the 220?
Well, their major, actually, Latvia has a couple of different ways of producing. They have three major hydroelectric dams, and they also have coal burning.
Coal-fired power plants?
Yes. To my knowledge, they don't have any nuclear. So there's we were looking to put in another coal-fired plant, which at that time was about $300 million. That was through Burns and Rowe and Westinghouse. But unfortunately, the Latvians never were able to come up with the money.
Had they come up with the money, is the coal in the country?
The coal is not in the country, to my knowledge. I'm not sure. They have peat, a huge amount of peat. But as far as coal is, I think they're bringing in from one of the, either Russia or Belarus, or the one of the stands. They have a good railway system.
Oh, sure.
Although the system is a different, the Western railway system, which is a big problem. Bringing a train from Russia to Europe, you have to change. You have to basically change because it's different size, a different width of track. Right? People don't know that.
So the other thing that I wanted to get to is I'm continually, and people who I'm talking about, people who were there and experienced Russia, not much Latvia, but that whole region, former Soviet Union, is abundant with resources that are literally untapped. How significant is that?
They have a huge, huge amount of untapped resources, which is part of what's going on today. With the globalists have been trying, specifically the Rothschilds and who's ever behind them, have been trying to break up Russia for over 100 years to get to their natural resources. They have a huge amount of natural resources. Stunning.
All right. And why would they not do a better? They have the ability. Why would they not do a better job utilizing the resources in an efficient manner? Infrastructure. You mean,
no, well, no, they had 90 years of communism that mm-hmm. that controlled them. Right? And there's this one thing. I'm trying to remember the actual terminology. I think it was called the Valley of Death, which was a place where I think it was a nickel smelting company polluted so bad that nothing grew from acid rain. I think there's a whole book written on it. So a little, that was during the Soviet time. During the Soviet time was controlled by the Zionists, and they didn't care about the environment. And now they're using the environment to try and take control back of the earth, right? You know, it's like, oh, let's go to zero. Oh, I got one of those. Let's go to zero carbon, right? And some in the news, net zero is a national security threat and must be abandoned. Said a former security minister in England. No kidding. Decarbonizing the steel and electric industry is in pursuit of net zero represents a real and present danger to national security.
And must be and life, period.
No kidding. Right. This whole thing is just a dog and pony show to control, right, for, again, certain bloodlines. They're all related. And they're trying to force us into this and then force us into not using resources, blaming it that we're ruining the environment. Now, I believe in taking care of the environment, but they're just basically lying through their teeth. And now even more, guess what? The climate czar, John Kerry, has now stepped down, and the new climate czar is none other than John Podesta.
I didn't know John Kerry stepped down. And John Podesta should be in prison, I think.
He should be in more than in prison. He should be in hell.
Yeah. Well, he's on his own path.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's like going, as a well-known climate warrior, it makes sense Podesta would be pushing the policies against American energy interests. Right. I think that, and somebody called that Congress must investigate Podesta. I think they should investigate Podesta on rape. Pedophilia.
Who's going to investigate him? People who facilitated it happening?
I don't know. You know.
So, before I get back to Podesta, I just wanted to do one final thing on the Russia discussion, man, because I think it was fantastic getting a firsthand account of what's happening there. And we always hear that Russia has an abundance of resources that are untapped. Truth of the matter is that we have a government today in the United States, which is working at putting our resources as untapped, because news today that the last piece of equipment in Seward, Alaska is being sold or auctioned off to be destroyed because we're no longer going to utilize coal equipment to recover a resource, which we have 800. You remember back in the old days, we got to abandon coal because we're going to run out. We have 800 years worth of coal left. I got a feeling there's going to be a new technology that is as efficient as coal developed in the meantime. Meanwhile, let's continue to use the resource that we have.
Well, yeah. And what about California just shut down one of their hydroelectric dams? It was already
another
built.
One. Another one.
Destroyed it. So you have people destroying the infrastructure of the United States, which has basically been the same thing for 50 years. Right. Ever since, you know, I just looked at it as very suspicious. It was about the time we started bringing in the Nazis with Project Paperclip that we started offshoring our manufacturing to China. It actually started. Who was the first ambassador to China during the Nixon time?
Probably Kissinger.
George Bush Sr.
Oh, really?
Right? It's rumored he has over 800, the Bush cabal has over 800 companies in China. they offshored our manufacturing. The wealth of a country is based on manufacturing, agriculture, and mineral rights. And if you look, since World War II, we've shut down manufacturing, mineral rights, and condensed our, I think, pretty much destroyed a good amount of our agriculture.
I'd agree.
Yeah. And
well, just like, 87% of the textiles forever, for 20 years that I've been involved and aware, are 87% are in Asian countries. We don't do any manufacturing of essentials like clothing in the United States anymore. Only 13%.
Yeah. This is going to be a nightmare when it breaks. And now financially, we look that it's about ready to break.
So we're down to 2 minutes. What's our preparation tips for the day to get ready for this break?
Run! No,
that's not one of the options.
Oh, man.
Where are you going to go? Russia? I hear there's great resources in Siberia.
Yeah, well, if Putin will give you, 10 hectares of land to start a farm for free. So anyway.
Looking for my 40 acres and a mule.
Right. Well, I think it is prep and prep and prep. I mean, just every day, it's more about prep because, if as soon as our grid goes down, think about this. If somebody's smart enough to, if an enemy is smart enough to get us invaded with 22 million illegal immigrants, mm-hmm. then they're smart enough to turn off our grid when they're ready to do it. Our grid is just wide open, ready to be turned off, and then that drops our supply chain. And then, so what are you going to do for food or medicine?
The sad irony is that we're turning our grid off ourselves, going to unreliable sources of energy. That's why I ask you about the source of electricity in Latvia. Final 20 seconds, JC, take home our profound message of the day.
Well, if you haven't picked up the book When Technology Fails, please get it, or Dare to Prepare by Holly Dale, it's coming down brutal fight, who's going to be standing? And now they are allowing another moron, Pat Ryan, a New York Democrat, let's allow illegal immigrants into our military. Okay, yeah, okay, let's get the illegal people the
yep. high power. History tells us how effective that is. JC Cole, Trent Luce, we've completed our journey down the path connecting food producers to food consumers. Both of us remind you that all roads do lead to a rural route. I do want to remind you also, before I let you go, that Certified Piedmontese is a group of Great Plains cattlemen working together to produce the most tender beef on the planet. You don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. Order at cpbeef.com. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. Thanks, JC.
Thanks.